chapter 13, hit it, at the entanglement, cause and methods by which the material nature entangles the jivatma. And the cause was the three modes of material nature. Chapter 14 delineates the process on details about the three modes of material nature, and at the end it describes how to become free from the modes of material nature by taking shelter of Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in pure devotional service, unflinching and continuous in all circumstances. And if one does that, if one takes shelter of Krishna by surrendering to one's bona fide spiritual master, then one transcends the modes of material nature and comes to the level of Krishna consciousness, the Brahman level, and that Brahman is the shelter, takes shelter of Krishna. Krishna is the shelter of that Brahman. Brahman, Brahmanohi Pratishtanam. So in this chapter, 15, the Yoga of the Supreme Person, the first thing that's going to be discussed is a metaphor about the universe and the situations of the living entities within the universe. The living entities are bound by the modes of material nature, and they are situated in the universe, which is compared to a banyan tree, a swata tree, a swat. Asva means horse, and ta means stand. So as a horse may stand with three legs on the ground and one leg up. So similarly, this one leg up is the one quarter, ekapad vibhuti. The one quarter of the estimated total of the entire creation, material and spiritual, is the whole, and one quarter of it is the material world. So this aswatthama tree is to represent the entire material creation. And then after Krishna will describe the living entity's relationship with this material creation, he'll then describe the process of getting out and where one goes when one is out, and then finally how one transmigrates or changes his body from one different situation to another, controlled by the three modes of material nature, within the material world, within the banyan tree of the material world. So that's what we should discuss today. So Krishna explains in the first verse, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is said that there is an imperishable banyan tree, it is avyaya, it is eternal. The material world is not eternal in the sense that that the spiritual world is eternal, but the material world is eternal in the sense that the ingredients of the material world are either manifest or unmanifest, but they always exist. So there's an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down. So this analogy shows us that the root is up and the branches are down. So we can imagine a tree with the root up and the branches down, quite the opposite of the trees we see outside this building and any other building. Because usually, obviously, the roots are down and the branches are up and the leaves are up. But this tree is just the opposite. So the reason why it is opposite to what we see is given very clearly, as just like the trees, by a reservoir of water, by a lake, when we look at a tree which is by the lake, and we look in the reflection, as we look at the reflection of the tree in the water of the lake, we see that the leaves are upward, the root is upward and the branches are down. So this indicates that just as the tree of this material world, material existence, is simply a reflection of actual existence. So as the reflection of the tree is situated on water and the real tree is situated on the land, similarly the real tree is the spiritual world and the reflection of the real tree is with its roots upwards and its branches down upon the water of the material world. And that means that our situation within the material world is situated on our desire. Just as the reflection of the tree is situated on water, similarly, our situation in the material world is based on our desire. So that's a very interesting point. Why? What is the real interesting aspect of that? That our situation in the material world is based on our desire, just as the reflection of the tree is based on the situation of water. What is interesting about that when we apply it to ourselves in our own situation?
It keeps us here.
Huh?
It keeps us here.
What keeps us here?
The desires.
Yeah? Speak about it more. Something else?
Or do the desire makes moves?
Yes, and therefore our situation changes.
We can decide to get out.
Yeah, by desiring. Whatever we desire. Not that I desire to be to have $1 billion and to be able to fly to any part of the world in my private jet anytime I want, and suddenly we're there. Not like that. But if we desire in a particular way, that desire will place us gradually into a position, a certain situation. So our situation within the material world is actually, in fact, based on our desires. So therefore, in material life and in spiritual life, the key is what you desire. Based on the subtle desire, the gross situation will be developed. And this will actually be described moments. So, continuing the example of the tree, remember this banyan tree represents the material world. And its leaves of this tree are the Vedic hymns, which are recommended for fruitive activities, the chandas. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas, because the root of this tree is the is Brahmaloka or reflection of the spiritual tree, the spiritual existence. And therefore one who knows this tree knows the Vedas, because one who knows this tree understands the purpose of the Vedas, which is means Vedas Chasavarhamevavidyo, we described in this very chapter. The purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna, to get out of the water altogether, to find the actual root or source of the tree. There are many, many points we could discuss here, but we won't. More on the tree. For the next, up to text 4, we'll discuss the tree and how to get out of the tree. The branches of this tree extend downward and upward, nourished by the three modes of material nature. So whatever combination of the modes of material nature affect us, then we are placed in one part of the tree or another. So if someone is full of tamagun, the mode of ignorance, then he's in a very low part of the tree. And if someone has the mode of goodness, so much mode of goodness, he's in a very high part of the tree. But it's not actually the tree, it's the reflection of the tree. But one who is situating the mode of goodness is closer to the actual root, because it's a reflection. The reflection of the root is close to the actual root. Is this clear? Is that clear?
No.
Okay. Now we will exhibit artistic talent. Possibly. This side is the water. And this side is the land. Okay? Now first, there is a tree. This is a tree. It doesn't have any leaves at this point. Hey, it's quite brilliant, isn't it? Okay, now it has a few leaves. You'll have to imagine. You have to use your imagination a little. This is the tree growing on the land, okay? And on this tree there are birds and there are monkeys and green leaves and fruits and so many wonderful things. This is reality. This is reality. This is the spiritual world. Now here in the water, in its shimmering way, which is always moving and changing, the water is like that, there is a reflection of the tree. So here is the root of the tree. Okay? This is root of the tree. This is the root of the real tree. And this is water over here. So, the real tree, the tree of the material world is situated on water. It's shimmering. The water means our desire. So based on our desire, we are in one part of the tree, over here, in this material world, in the reflection of the real tree. We are situated based on our desire. If we have a lot of the mode of goodness, we'll be higher. Closer to, of course, it's not really this kind of a tree, it's a banyan tree, a swat, with so many branches coming up and down, branches and roots. But closer to the root over here, this is the mode of goodness. So it's higher, even though it may look lower. It may look lower because the lower part of the tree is the root. So this looks like it's lower, but it's actually higher in the sense that it's closer to the real tree. And the lower part, this is the mode of ignorance, down here. So when one's in the mode of ignorance, one gets further from reality. And one is in the mode of goodness, he becomes closer to reality. So the branches of this tree extend downward and upward because it's a banyan tree, aswata, and it's nourished by the three modes of material nature. The twigs are the objects of the senses, so depending upon which mode of material nature nourishes a part of the tree, that part will be higher or lower in the mode of goodness or in the mode of passion. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Good. And the twigs are the objects of the senses. So, depending upon what objects of the senses you like, according to your modes of material nature, you'll gravitate towards one part of the tree or another. And they are bound to the fruit of actions of human society. The tree also has roots going down. So if you go upwards on the tree, you're close to, it's like demigod life. If you go downward on the tree, it's animal life, hellish existence. Now, the real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. Because we are in the tree. And if you've seen a big banyan tree, there are so many roots going up and down, everywhere. So entangled, and you can't tell where the beginning of the tree actually is. Similarly, we can't actually understand the true nature of this material world and where it begins. All that we know is it starts at the root, which is Lord Brahma. And ultimately, on the other side, it starts from Krishna. One can't, when one is in the material world, you can't understand the true nature of the material world because you are in it. When you're in the middle of the banyan tree, everywhere you look, you see branches and trees. Just imagine a huge banyan tree. Who's seen a huge banyan tree in their life? How big is the one you saw? The real big one.
Well, much bigger than this room.
Yeah, where was it?
In Florida, in South Florida.
Bigger than this room. And there were so many branches going up and down. And imagine you're a tiny ant somewhere in the middle of that tree. Who's seen even a bigger banyan tree than one of them? where?
It's an issue.
How big?
4 times as big as this room. Over a river.
Same tree. In Calcutta, there's supposed to be a really huge one.
Devudur, there's one with 45 steps. You cannot find the step.
Where is it?
The, all the rooms have, they have grown up with 45 steps.
Yeah.
There's one that into there. Aged very old.
Very old. So this material universe, just imagine how many stems and branches and roots going up and down. You cannot find the beginning, you cannot find the end. We're so tiny in the middle of the whole thing. And all we're thinking of, we see on one end of the tree, we see some fruit that we like. And we're thinking, I want to get that fruit. That means a desire comes into our heart. So we gravitate, we want to go to that branch of the tree. And then in our next life, we're there. Tasting that fruit, hoping that that fruit will make us happy. So our material existence means simply traveling from one branch to another. Sometimes our desire is a low desire in the mode of ignorance and we go down. And sometimes, and that doesn't bring us happiness, we get new desires. So we desire to go up and taste the different fruit. So this is material life. Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavanji. Brahmanda Brahmate, wandering throughout all the different universes from one branch of the tree to the other, trying to become happy. And actually we don't become happy. So the real form of this tree, because we're on it, we're right in the middle of it. And one of the scientists with their big brains, they're examining, they're trying to imagine what the whole tree looks like. So sometimes they'll send a rocket, some rocket out with a camera to, as if they were going outside the tree and take a picture looking back. So they can, and then tell you what, when you're on the tree, so they're trying to tell you what it looks like from way out there. So you can get an idea what it's, what it, the whole thing looks like. But they actually never get out of the tree to do it. Because it's impossible to get so far out of the tree. You have to go to the spiritual world and they can't, they're not qualified. So they're always doing that, trying to send back information so we can see what the whole thing looks like. And in addition, what they do is try to examine one little tiny branch, one leaf of one branch, and they spend all their energy just trying to understand that completely. So they're trying to understand the whole big thing or the smallest part, trying to understand what it's made out of. The same concept is there. So sometimes scientists, they'll take some huge atom smasher, and they'll smash the atom into smaller size, and then smash the smaller particle into a smaller particle, and smash the smaller particle into a smaller particle. And each one of these smashers costs billions of billions of dollars, and they just keep smashing it, or just examining and pulling it apart, or sending a rocket out further and looking back. And they actually can never, ever, ever understand what the whole thing is made out of or what it looks like. Krishna says this, it cannot be perceived in this world. One cannot understand it. This is also described in the Bhagavad Gita. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. How it is situated, what is it based upon. No one can understand what is the ultimate principle which it rests upon. So Krishna has given his determination what to do now. His idea of what to do. But with determination, one must cut down this tree, this strongly rooted tree, with a weapon of detachment. In other words, don't worry about what it looks like. And why must one be so determined? Because we're so much in the habit of wanting to taste the fruit of the different branches of the tree. Enjoy this. See this. Taste that. And our mind becomes full of all these ideas of what we want. So we have to be very determined. And with detachment, we have to say, no, I don't want to enjoy anything within this material world. No. And that detachment is born of strong Krishna conscious intelligence. We've studied this before. What is the verse in the third chapter? What is the verse? Not the verse number.
Imam Guru Param Purva Sam Sukhatmana Matana Jai Shatram Mahabahu Kamarama.
It's very formidable. Dharasata means formidable enemy. The higher self with their intelligence, we say, no! No more! I've had enough! I already know that there is no fruit within this world that's going to make me happy. I don't want to be here. I want to go there, to reality. With the weapon of detachment. But that's not enough. You have to get off the tree. You can't just cut and still stay on the tree. You have to be detached. But you must seek that place. You must seek that place from where, having gone, one never returns. And there, that's this place over here, one has to get off the reflection of the water, because this is always moving, and it is always changing. One must go from there to here. And one must hold on very tight. And what is that holding on very tight? That is, one must surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, from whom everything began and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial. So in other words, Sarvakarana Karanam, that Krishna is the source of everything. Every detail is described in the Bhagavatam. Not every detail, but some details are described. The general principles of creation of the material world is described in the Bhagavatam, but one need not know every detail, because the purpose of understanding any detail is to know that Krishna is the source and that we should go there. One cannot understand this material world, but one can understand that Krishna is the source from whom everything has extended. So through Krishna's expansions and the expansions of Krishna's expansions, everything has extended. Everything comes. And there, in the spiritual world, one should surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything began and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial. Prabhupada explains in his purport, one has to search out that origin of this tree, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How should one search it out? What is the process of understanding? Through the association of persons who are in knowledge of that Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what? How? By association with people who know the science of Krishna consciousness and know Krishna. They can tell us about Krishna. Why? Because this tree is situated on water. Our desire. So if we hear about Krishna, who is over there, our desire to be with Krishna will grow, and that will defeat our desires to taste the fruit of this material world, and then only will we be able to go there. And that is actually the source of our detachment, that desire to go to Krishna. And the more we hear about Krishna, the more that desire will increase. Why? Because Krishna is all attractive. So the key in that is associating with those who know Krishna, but not, and not only knowing, but loving and serving. And then we understand why they are loving and serving Krishna, because Krishna is so wonderful. And we also want to love and serve that wonderful Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as our desire grows and grows and grows, then naturally we don't want to taste the fruits of this material world, and they seem more and more bitter. Now what is the process of surrendering? That Supreme Person, that's going to be described in text number 5. And then there'll be something described about that spiritual world. And I'll read those verses quickly, because we're asked to go there. Why should we go there? First, what is the surrendering process? And what is it like in that spiritual world? Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association. You have to be free from these things, or else we cannot cut. Who understand the eternal, they know the difference between material and spiritual. Who are done with material lust, who are free from all dualities of happiness and distress. Why? Because they're not interested in jumping from one tree to another, one branch to another. They want to get off completely. That's dualities. We jump. There's two reasons why we change our material situation. One is we want something, so we jump there to get it. And the other is we don't want something, so we jump away to avoid. So that's attachment and aversion. They keep us jumping on the tree of material life. So the dualities of happiness and distress, and who are unbewildered, they know how to surrender to the Supreme Person. They attain to that eternal kingdom. And what is that eternal kingdom like? This is a very simple introduction to the spiritual world. There's been another verse in the 8th chapter. Describe something of the spiritual world too. But there's very few verses in the Bhagavad Gita that describe the spiritual world. Text 20 of the 8th chapter, page 436, Krishna says, Paratas mad tu bhavo nyo vyakto avyakto sanatana yana saveshu bhuteshu Nasyatsu nasyati. Yet there is another unmanifested nature which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifest and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and it is never annihilated. When all this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. In other words, this part is eternal. So here it says, and another statement about that spiritual world, that supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world. So that means when we go there, we never have to again come back to the material world. The Spirit Prabhupada explains in his purport, the spiritual world, the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, which is known as Krishna Loka Goloka Vrindavan, is described here. In some description, but this description is not like in Srimad Bhagavatam. The description in Srimad Bhagavatam is so much more detailed, so much more beautiful. We describe, not only is it eternal, but there are Chintami Dham, there are Kalpavriksha trees, Krishna is playing on his flute, and Brahma Samhita describes that every step is a dance, every word is a song. The essence of everyone is so Krishna conscious, just thinking Krishna, 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 Krishna. There are transcendental cows. And this is reality. Everyone simply loves Krishna. There are mothers, there are fathers, there are sons, there are girls, there are boys, there are friends. Everyone just loves Krishna. Krishna is the center of everything. He's so beautiful with his yellow dhoti and curling hair, lotus eyes, playing his flute, flower garlands, jewels, necklaces, prasadam that he's carrying, peacock feather in his hair. So beautiful, with his gentle smiling and his dancing eyes. He's looking at his devotees out of the corner of his eye, leaning on one friend, playing, touching. So beautiful. Skin rubbed with the minerals of Vrindavan. Hair clustered like crow's feathers sometimes. Playing, jumping. This is reality. This world is a reflection. But very little is mentioned here. The Goswamis of Vrindavan have revealed so much about Vrindavan. Now, so we should want to go there. We should want to jump off the street of material life and go there to that spiritual world. But yet we seem to stay in the material world. Why? That's going to be described here. This transmigration, or the change of bodies by the soul, and the cause, and what makes us go from one body to another. Why do we end up, why are you in your body? How did I get into my body? How? Why? How does that take place? Krishna is now going to describe that by saying first, mama vamso, mama eva amsa. Mama vamso, mama eva amsa. All living entities, mama vamso jiva loke, all the jivas, the living entities in this world, they are certainly my amsa, my part and parcel. Jiva bhuta sanatana. It is not that we become, we're Krishna's, we're eternal souls, and then when we get out of illusion, then we go back and become God and merge into Brahman. No, we are sanatana. What does sanatana mean? Eternal. Yeah? Eternal. So we're eternally jiva. Tatastha jakti. It's not that we become one God. So the living entity in the material world, continuing description of him, he carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another, as the air carries aromas. Just like the air passes over a garbage dump and we smell the wind just coming from a garbage dump, oh, it's horrible. But then that same wind will go over a rose garden and it will smell so wonderful. So that fragrance is just carried by the wind, and similarly our mind carries different conceptions of life. Who we are, what is good, what is bad, what is happiness, what is distress. When a worm thinks in terms of happiness, he's just in the ground, in the dark. He's thinking of, he's eating earth all day long and he thinks this is happiness. And a human being, if you put him in that situation, he would think it is hell. So every living entity, based on his mind, carries around a certain concept of life, which includes happiness, and what's good and what's bad, what's happy, what's miserable. So many concepts, they're all relative, and they're being carried around by the mind, which is just like the wind going from one place to another. So how does the living entity get his conceptions of life? Think in the example of the wind. How does the living entity gain his conceptions of life?
From his association.
Yes, exactly. Mm. From his association. So if we associate with garbage dumps, there's a saying in English, it's a village expression, if you go lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. Very deep. If you associate with dog-like people, you will capture all their diseases. And their diseases mean their concepts of life. So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the prime quality of the Vaishnava is asat sanga tyag e Vaishnava tyag, that he gives up materialistic association. Because he doesn't want to capture by that association the material concepts of life. And they take their different concepts of life from one body to another, just as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another body. So this has been explained in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Yam yam vapi smram bhavam tyajanyan te kalenam. But what we're thinking at the time of death, what's in our mind at the time of death will carry us to our next body. If we love our dog very much, and we're thinking about dog at the time of death, in our next life, we won't be a dog. And that is rough. Very difficult. So we don't want that. So the essence of material of life is we have to fill our consciousness with Krishna consciousness, not material consciousness. That's why sometimes, and based on those mind's desires, what happens? The living entity thus takes another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which is grouped about the mind. So based on the mind, we get a particular eye, nose, everything, body, everything comes based on the mind, what is filling the mind. And the mind is full of whatever we associate with. So sometimes devotees will watch television or go to the movies and things like this. How foolish is this? Why? Why is it foolish? Or even why is it dangerous? Not even foolish. Why is it dangerous?
It's creating samskaras in the mind.
Yeah, you're getting impressions in the mind that will lead you to another body. And these things are so deep. They so deeply affect the mind. Because they artificially give you very deep senses of pleasure and very deep senses of pain. And things that are deeply pleasurable and painful, stick in the mind very deeply. You cannot get them out. You cannot get them out. Prabhupada once was lecturing in Hawaii, and he was saying, how the devotees who go surfing, go out and ride the waves on surfboards, how dangerous it is. Why? Because they're creating a sanskara impression in their consciousness to ride the water all the time, be underwater and in the water. So in their next life they can become fish. So we can joke, we can make so many jokes about that, and Prabhupada did too. But actually he said it is such a dangerous thing, because if you become a fish you may not come to human life again for billions of years. So it is, so for that little pleasure, how much do you have to pay? So all these desires, unlimited desires in our heart. So it is so dangerous, and that will force us to take a specific body. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. So when a devotee who has knowledge sees a person drinking or engaging in horrible activities or going to the movies or this and that, his heart, a devotee, because his heart is soft and he's compassionate, feels so much pain because he sees these human beings are misusing their human life, and their next life is going to be an animal birth. How unfortunate they are. And that, he is part of dukkha-dukkhi, and that actually gives him pain to see the suffering of another. This is nice consciousness. So therefore the devotee preaches to be kind and merciful to others, to save them from the dangerous condition of losing their human form of life. The endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. But those whose minds are not developed, who have no knowledge, and are contaminated, and have covered by passion ignorance, who are not situated in self-realization, they cannot see what is taking place, although they may try. Very, very heavy. They cannot see. To the degree that we are purified, we can see. Well, this is very, very important. Very good material to preach on, too. And very good material, of course, to realize. Any questions or comments? What? There are pigs. Yes. We love to talk about the pigs of Vrindavan. What about the pigs? You mean next life or last life?
But I can see the pigs, they are very much interested in the pigs.
Yeah.
In which way?
Why are they so interested in the pigs? I don't know. But they're so attractive, even though they're repulsive. Because the pigs... Okay, I will speculate why I am attracted to the pigs. Because they're obviously in the most horrible condition of life. They're in the water, in the sewers, and they're drinking and enjoying and grunting. And they have their little piglets all around them, and they're so, and they're just wallowing in the sewer. When it's hot, it's the most amazing thing. You see the pigs in the sewers, and they're just... And they're in ecstasy. It's pig heaven. And we just look at them. It's so amazing to see how happy they are. So this is material life. They're in the worst of all conditions. And they're thinking they're enjoying. So it is amazing to us. We're thinking, boy, look how foolish they are. But we forget we're no different. Huh? This is the last time they're going to take birth. And sometimes, you know what they do, Mataji? Sometimes if you go in near the bazaar, in the lower class, and you hear the pigs screaming and screaming and screaming, and they're pulling their hair out. They pull their hair out, and I don't know what they do with it exactly. They make toothbrushes or something. And the pigs go, well, I don't know. They make some really amazing screaming noise. And they're pulling their hair out. I don't know if they make shaving brushes or toothbrushes or hair brushes or what. And sometimes they take them out of Vrindavan and kill them. And feed them to people. Huh? And Vrindavan is becoming more and more... There are some few places that sell meat, but not in the open in Vrindavan. So that wasn't a question, you just wanted some pig pita. little pig pita we got. No, lots of people touch them, but not very high class people. Things have been done a very deep subject matter.
When we only see it relative, the pigs will have it. For us, it's abominable, the condition of life. But as you said, they are enjoying. Yeah. So how can that be health or hellish conditions? So only in our condition, when we are in that such a body.
And not only that, we're in anxiety now. And we're not enjoying as much as them. So therefore, we should become pigs. What a great idea. No more. We have come to the right conclusion. Just to show us how ignorant it is. Compared to what real pleasure is, actually they're not enjoying very much. We have to understand that they're perverted. Their idea of pleasure is perverted.
But they can't realize.
Yes.
Or do they can't
because they're in... No. They're in so much ignorance. What is the most abominable thing? That's the meaning of ignorance. What is good they think of as bad, and what is bad they think of as good. And if they can understand... If the soul was uncovered and they were in that position, if they actually had their memory, they would die immediately. They could not tolerate the pain of being in that situation. Just imagine taking you and being in that situation.
I often imagine that.
Yes. What do you think?
Yeah, that is abominable.
Yes. So just imagine how dull their consciousness must be to think it's wonderful. Just think how much ignorance they must be to think that's wonderful. So if ignorance becomes the source of pleasure, if ignorance becomes the source of good, then Kali Yuga is... That's Kali Yuga. Ignorance is the... Just like any sane man, killing is the most abominable thing. Still, what's going on? This is ignorance.
Deborah thought going to hell is not as bad because we don't know that we're in hell.
Okay, so if you're such a scientist,
You should. No, you shouldn't. Okay, I take that back. You shouldn't. But let's look at it the other way. If being in the gutter full of stool and urine is so wonderful, just imagine how wonderful Krishna Loka is. Think of it like that.
That is what I thought. It has to be so the same consciousness is then transferred into this, to learn of it.
What? The same consciousness? No, it's just so covered and foolish and ignorant.
But the thing he says, in hell, you actually
suffer.
Yeah, but then you have your consciousness. And then you're getting trained up to the big bugs. So you won't think. That's why I don't think it's so bad. Yeah, that's what I heard. You get trained up on the subtle planets, and they throw you in this river where you can, you know, swim around and eat, you know, midges and maggots and stool and stuff. And then you get a body, and then you have been trained up to enjoy it. But before that,
I think it's good.
Yeah, but before you get the pig body, it's not at all nice.
But also, you go to Hong Kong and you see what the people eat there in China. It's like a different concept. I remember when we used to preach in 1972. One time I got fired up to preach against meat eating. So I went around Hong Kong and I took all these photos, slides of pigs hanging and pieces of meat, and a friend of mine from the Philippines had gone to a slaughterhouse in the jungle, and they had taken a picture of a man, pictures of people cutting off the heads of water buffalo and the blood dripping out. So I remember one time I was showing the slideshow, and I was saying how horrible it is and abominable it was. And then at the end they said, "How do you feel?"
"I'm hungry."
People said, "Hungry." So different bodies, see, this is the point, on different species of life, different people have different tastes, different twigs that they appreciate, like that. So, but it doesn't mean that the pleasure is the same, or the consciousness is the same. It means that there's different coverings of ignorance, different kinds of suffering. It's actually suffering. And we think it's enjoyment. Like the camel eating thorns and tasting its blood and thinking this thorn tastes so good. That verse means whatever we are thinking, remembering at the time of death, we'll go
in Bhagavatam, we get a description of many nice manners. If you have to visit in this simple activity, then you will go to this nice planet. What is the situation with
you? If you live simply, at the time of death, you will think sinfully and you will go
there.
No, somehow. If you live sinfully, how will you be situated in the mode of goodness? This is the illusion of the materialist. I will live a hellish life, and at the last moment, I will think, chant Hare Krishna, and go back to God. And that way I will enjoy, and then really enjoy. That is cheating, and who do you think is a better cheater? You or Krishna? Yes. Yes, so you take off your shoe and beat. What else to do with this? It's a cheating mentality. I'll live like a thief, and then when it's time to get caught, I'll say I'm sorry, and then I won't get punished. So who is so foolish to go for that? So whatever your mind is attached to, just like if someone pushes you, if you're walking down the street and someone pushes you, you'd be terrified. And is it easy to say Hare Krishna then? You just become terrified. So when you're dying, if you've done horrible things in your life, your mind is going to think about your mother, your dog, your money, your girlfriend, your wife, your television. something that you saw, whatever is deeply impressed in your consciousness, you will think about that and that only. The mind will go for that, you know.
First, you know,